In the 3 o'clock hour on Tuesday, we enter the executive suite, the biggest federal government decisions being made at the highest levels, and you receive advice for making those decisions from people who have been in the executive suite talking about those. Today, I'm very pleased to have Melissa Hathaway, the president of Hathaway Global Strategies and former senior director for cyberspace for the National Security and Homeland Security Councils on the program. Thank you very much for being on, Melissa. Good to talk to you again.
Francis, thank you for having me.
Happy to do it. I wanted to bring you back because of your testimony to the House Homeland Security Subcommittee last week about an issue that's very close to your heart, and that is the cybersecurity legislation that members of Congress are working on right now. And as we go throughout the course of the show today, I want to talk to you about some of those. But before we do that, I'd like to dive into your testimony a little bit and ask you to follow up on some of the things that you told the committee. First of all, we have a link to your testimony at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we have a link to the video of the hearing so folks can go and see exactly what you had to say to the committee, who the other witnesses were, and really gain a context for some of the things that we're going to talk about on the program today. You talk about the continuing vulnerability of federal and private networks, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I detected maybe a little bit of a level of frustration both in your written testimony and in the oral testimony that you gave to the committee. Did I pick up on something there? Is that fair, do you think?
Well, I definitely think that our defensive posture remains weak, and we're reading about and hearing about breach after breach after penetration, and it seems as if the periodicity or the problem is getting worse, not better.
What do you think is driving that? Why is it that people, after the amount of high-profile breaches that we've heard about, especially now over the last couple of weeks in the national defense community and national security community, why haven't people awaken to the fact that this is going to take work and it's going to take resources?
I think that they're now just starting to embrace the fact that it's going to take resources. Many organizations can just start cleaning up their network by simple patch, keeping their security systems up to date with software updates up to date with the latest patches. You know, everybody talks about Patch Tuesday, but Patch Tuesday is real, and sometimes it's Patch Tuesday and it's Patch Friday that will help make your enterprises more secure. But it does take work, and it takes a lot of education of all of the people who are actually using the infrastructure.
We talked before we went on the air about some of these breaches, and I mentioned the RSA breach, and I'd like you to kind of review that. You talked about it, as you mentioned, when you were here last time, but I'd like you to review that because that's the one that seems to be hard for non-security people, I think, to kind of wrap their heads around, because it didn't involve the typical cybersecurity breach where I think anybody can understand if your personal information is taken. This wasn't that. So if you could kind of give me the thumbnail on that again, please.
Sure. If your personal what was taken was basically the key to unlock the door to your enterprise. So let's say I'm calling in or actually connecting into the enterprise from home, I'll need a key or a token that gives me a scrambled number that changes every minute, or the specific key to get into the enterprise that says, yes, that's me getting into the enterprise, or the key to, like, your front door. And when you have the keys taken, then it makes the diligence have to be much stronger on the other end to prove that the person who's using the key is actually the person who's supposed to be using the key.
That especially hits close to home because I had a car stolen about 10 years ago, and the police said because the person who stole the car had the key to the car, literally, they couldn't prosecute the guy because it was going to be my word against his that I didn't give him the key. So I understand exactly where you're headed, and it seems like there's a parallel there.
I think there is. And then to amplify it or make it things worse is with all of the breaches that have happened as of late, you know, whether it's Epsilon or it's Citigroup or it's Sony PlayStation, most people's identities have likely been compromised. So if you have your identities been taken and then your key is taken, then it would be very difficult for the person who's the system administrator or chief information security officer on the other end of the enterprise to truly tell if it's you or if it's somebody masquerading as you.
What did we learn, if anything, from the RSA breach that we can apply to future situations like this where we find ourselves in some cases not being able to tell whether there are even whether the people who are getting into the systems really shouldn't be getting into the systems?
Well, I think it's going to challenge our notion of two-factor authentication, meaning you have your own password and you have this special key, that because your password was likely stolen in some breach and then the key was stolen in a different breach, that the two-factor, the notion of having A plus B be difficult to get is now is no longer the case. So we'll be having to look for new technologies or different technologies for two-factor authentication to make it difficult or harder to break into the enterprise.
All right, last thing on this RSA breach. We know about some of the high-profile problems that came out of this, some of the companies who had their keys, in essence, stolen and then were broken into later. Is there anything behind the scenes that maybe didn't get as much attention but is something that should be on the radar screens of people who follow this kind of thing?
Well, I think that those who are using those types of tokens I would expect that most of the companies that were using them have replaced those tokens now to ensure that their enterprises are not part of the breach, the next breach.
Is the token system maybe the most effective way to continue this process?
For two-factor authentication, many companies use the soft tokens.
But is two-factor authentication even, is it secure enough, I guess, is where I'm headed?
Oh, well, I guess if, you know, I do believe that it's a good step in security so long as you've protected the keys. But if you proverbially can get the keys to the kingdom and you haven't protected them, then that's a different issue.
All right. When we come back, Melissa, I want to ask you about you lay out the four attack vectors that you're paying attention to in your testimony. I want to talk about those and talk about what they mean when we continue on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Melissa Hathaway, president of Hathaway Global Strategies and former senior director for cyberspace on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue in a moment.
For over 40 years, ManTech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for ManTech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, ManTech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row, was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. ManTech is an equal opportunity employer.
Here's John Strait, Acting Director of IT Services, USPS OIG, on the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix.
The majority of our workforce is mobile, between our auditors and our investigators, and we're looking to provide virtual sandboxes for these folks so they can go out and they can plug in into any device and they can have that secure environment that they can connect anytime, anywhere, from any location around the country. They can connect into the network and they can do the work that they need to do.
To listen to the whole program, log on to Federal News Radio. radio.com.
The benefits of virtualization are clear. Use less energy, generate less heat, take up less space. But before making the leap, make sure you're leveraging your existing Microsoft investment. You may already own key virtualization products like Remote Desktop Services, System Center, and Windows Server 2008 R2 with Hyper-V. These products put you well on your way to a well-managed, virtualized application, desktop, and server environment, moving toward the cloud. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/govcloud.
What is DoD doing to break down information stovepipes across the military? How has net centricity changed over time? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Dave Wenigren, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense on the Business of Government Hour. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour. Dave Wenigren, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 132 years, we've been protecting soldiers, airmen, and their families with low-cost life insurance and unique survivor assistance services. We focus on our members' best interests. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for military personnel and policies with no war, no aviation, and no terrorism clauses or surcharges. Get a free quote today at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Wednesday morning's Federal Drive. Sunny Bugwalia, leaving GSA to become the new CIO of Hawaii, will have an exit interview, and we'll learn more about new legislation that could impact the FAA's ability, or lack thereof, to unionize. That and more Wednesday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out on federalnewsradio.com.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Melissa Hathaway is my guest. We're talking about cybersecurity for the hour, in particular the House Homeland Security Committee looking at where we stand in cybersecurity. And Melissa, you've been on the show a number of times talking about cybersecurity legislation in Congress. And later on, we'll talk about where some of the cybersecurity legislation stands and your thoughts about that as you get to that. And you mentioned that in your testimony. But I wanted to ask you in particular about something on your testimony. And for folks who are looking at it on federalnewsradio.com, I'm on page 3. The CNCI, the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative, outlined multidimensional threats along 4 attack vectors: insider access, proximity access, remote access, and supply chain access. Insider access, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. That's somebody who is inside the organization and is a bad actor. That's a WikiLeaks type of breach. Am I correct about that?
Yes, but it could also be somebody who brings in, who is a trusted employee, but brings in a tainted technology on a thumb drive or on an iPod or on a smartphone that gets connected to the enterprise, and it's carrying the malware that it then infects the enterprise.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That would be similar to what this Deputy Secretary of Defense talked about in his foreign affairs article in the fall, where when a tainted thumb drive was brought into the Department of Defense and infected many of their networks.
Mm-hmm. So that it could be an intentional then or an unintentional breach access provided by somebody inside the organization.
That's right.
Okay. Talk about proximity access. That's a term I wasn't as familiar with.
Proximity is... proximity is within an area of your of the target or the enterprise. So let's just say you take your computer into the Starbucks or the Panera or pick your place that has a wireless access point, free Wi-Fi. That free Wi-Fi, if somebody else is in there or near you, they could tunnel in through the Wi-Fi port into your actual computer and then back into the enterprise. And as many people don't really have firewalls or the intrusion detection on their actual computer, mm-hmm. it's usually sitting at the firewall of their house or the firewall of their network.
So someone on a computer near me could use my computer to get through the VPN and get into the network of to whatever I'm connected to.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, and some people actually starting to see, I actually saw a warning label while I was in travel in an airport that said, you know, be careful because when you're using your Wi-Fi here, it's open and it's vulnerable to penetration. And I should have taken a picture of it.
Well, that's something I'll come back to as we go through this, because if those kinds of people, whoever it is that put that sign there, is aware of the potential danger here, and the average person who's using that space isn't, that says a lot about where we stand as far as understanding cybersecurity, and I'm not sure it's a great statement, so then we can maybe discuss that a little bit more later. That's the first two of these four attack vectors, insider access and proximity access. The third one is remote access, and I think I understand that one. That's the ability of somebody to essentially hack into somebody else's network from who knows where.
Yeah, it's coming through the internet to your computer. So I don't have to be next to you, and I don't have to give you a thumb drive. I'm just coming through and through the internet, and that's a click fraud, and you know, making you go to a false website, and all of the different things that we hear and read about every day.
The fourth one is one that I thought was particularly interesting, maybe because of the potential insidiousness of it and because of how unaware we as a country and sometimes even unfortunately as a government are about where our stuff is coming from, and that's supply chain access. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, this is where usually where a part of the software or hardware that's is manipulated in such a way that it can create the vulnerability or exploitation for as you embed it in your enterprise. And oftentimes, so this is where you see a gray market item, something that's counterfeit. And so it's not actually the product that it's not the pristine product that is attested to by the company. It's a counterfeit product which has something extra special in it that could then be used to gain access. The most interesting one of these is the point of sale terminals, which is where you, like if you go to a grocery store and mm-hmm. you swipe your credit card or your ATM, the point of sale terminals have had been compromised in Australia and in the United Kingdom and in many places here in the United States, where there's an extra something special there that transmits your card number and your PIN to a local organized crime unit in addition to your bank. And so that's where you get a lot of the credit card fraud and other things. There was a significant breach that happened in the UK supermarket chain where all of the point-of-sale terminals had been replaced with a new point-of-sale terminal with an extra special thing that phones home to the local criminals.
That's the Stansbury chain, I believe, that
mm-hmm.
was
yeah.
that. And that was, I think, the first major one where rank and file, just average people who just they're going about their business and aren't really thinking about it, started to understand how vulnerable they were in that country. Think about what would happen if that happened in one of our grocery store chains here in the United States. That would be potential for chaos, maybe. As we look at these four vectors, you write in your testimony, and you said to the Homeland Security Committee last week that the cyberspace policy review talked about the necessity to be more resilient to all types of cyber-based attacks. Are there one or two of those four that we're maybe not paying enough attention to that we should think about more?
Well, I think that the commodity market, the information security market, and all those vendors that are out there that are building products to make us more secure are still focused on the internet-based threat and so the remote access. There are some who are beginning to look at the insider threat and when there's an anomalous behavior or things are operating in a strange way on your enterprise. But there's hardly anybody looking at and detecting from on the Wi-Fi or supply chain. And supply chain, let's just say that might be a little bit difficult, but the Wi-Fi is more and more people have broadband access and wireless access, and we have much more of a mobile consumer, whether you're using your smartphone or your computer. I think that that's going to be a place where we need a lot more of technology in the security marketplace.
Just real quickly as we wrap up this segment, Melissa, why do you think supply chain access might be more difficult to detect? It would seem to me that there's a potential solution there by being able to go to maybe a safe site and use some of the operating system technology that exists to run a quick scan on your system and see if there's something there that shouldn't be there.
If it were a software play, that is perhaps true. But if it was something that got embedded in the hardware, then that would be much more difficult to detect. And with an increasingly global marketplace and development happening all around the world and second and third order suppliers feeding the primary suppliers, supply chain integrity and managing that is a lot more difficult to attest to.
The complexity of these problems never ceases to amaze me. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about some of the legislation that you and I have discussed already, some of the things that were advanced in the 111th Congress and some of the things that are being bounced around now in the 112th. My guest is Melissa Hathaway, who is president of Hathaway Global Strategies and a former cyber advisor to President Bush and President Obama. Our conversation continues on In Depth with Francis Rose in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life, yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Gwen Costin is GSA's Director of Mobile in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies.
Opening up the week of July 15th will be a much broader discussion where we're looking at how do we design that mobile future. We're really looking to have representatives and input from government, from state and local and tribal governments, industry, not-for-profits, academia, and the general public to let us know what they're looking for and how do we move forward.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
Profile America, Tuesday, June 28th. In the past, hot summer days meant that some enterprising youngsters in the neighborhood soft drink, usually carbonated. And while the summer heat does call for more to drink, Americans have a powerful thirst all year long. As a result, we each drink about 49 gallons of soft drinks annually, up 15 gallons in 20 years. The increasing popularity of bottled water has led to an even greater increase. In 1980, we each drank about 2.5 gallons of bottled water. Now that figure is over 29 gallons a year. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
If I could have a heart to heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart to heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart to heart with my dad.
If it were real heart to heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart to heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
In Depth with Francis Rose is on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're in the executive suite today talking about some of the highest level government decisions today on cybersecurity with Melissa Hathaway, the former cyber advisor to President Bush and President Obama, and now the president of Hathaway Global Strategies. And Melissa was before the House Homeland Security Subcommittee on, was it Thursday or Friday last week?
Friday.
And talking about these issues with the committee, and we're reviewing her testimony and talking about some of the things that she touched on in a little bit more detail. Where do we stand as far as legislation in the 112th Congress? You reviewed last time you were here the 50 or so pieces of legislation that Congress was reviewing in the 111th Congress. That's pretty much now all off the boards. Where are we today?
We have 10 pieces, at least 10 pieces that have been introduced in the Senate and another 9 or 10 in the House of Representatives.
One of the things you told the committee that kind of struck me as you talked about it was that even if you add all of these pieces of legislation together, none of that, none of the what's left, what would result, really addresses our cybersecurity challenges in a comprehensive manner. Talk about what's missing from what's out there, or is it just the fact that it's so many different pieces that all apply in a little bit of a way?
Well, I think that there's a lot of pieces that are addressing parts of the problem. For example, you have the Cybersecurity Enhancement Act, which talks to the need for research and development and the cyber workforce or workforce development. You have another that is addressing your personal privacy on the internet. You have still another that's talking about opening up broadband for the first responders so that they can have, you know, their own wireless network if in the event of a problem. And then still others that are talking about regulating the critical infrastructure so that it has, in theory, higher security standards.
What's missing? What would you like to see in some of the legislation that's there or in some of the policies that are being developed?
Well, I think that there are some good things that are being discussed, which is the Federal Information Security Management Act that has been introduced in the last two Congresses to update it from a checklist of compliance to more of a continuous monitoring. I think that that's important to update and to carry forward, and although it's mostly applied to the federal government, it is definitely something that the private sector, I think, is adopting now as they're having more and more breaches. Another is harmonizing the state data breach laws under one federal umbrella, which is important because if you have a breach in one state, you have a different set of notification rules that follow if it than if it were to happen in a different state. So Massachusetts has a different law than Virginia, which has a different law than Oklahoma, than and so on. And so if you lived in one of those states, you might have a notification responsibility of 5 days, and in another state it might be 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are things that are part of both the president's proposal and being discussed as part of the House and Senate legislative agenda. There are other laws that I think need to be updated, and those include the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is part of the president's proposal to stiffen the penalties of a data breach. I think that the Economic Espionage Act needs to be updated so that the amount of economic espionage or industrial espionage that is underway in the U.S. Has a penalty associated with it, and I think that that would act as an outside or an external deterrent for those who are committing those crimes from other nations. I think it's going to be important to update the Electronic Communications and Privacy Act and some of the other laws that are outdated because of they were written in a time of plain old telephone service or wired telephone service and not during the age really of the true internet that we're conducting all of our business on.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore the law enforcement community is not as able to do its job because of the way that those laws were written for a different type of telecommunications service.
One of the implications in the things that you're talking about, Melissa, is that the people who are making these policies, whether it's Congress or the administration, have to understand the technologies that are involved. I'm not really that worried about that from the administration side. I am a little more worried about that from the congressional side. Are you getting a sense that awareness and understanding and comprehension of the complexity of these issues is improving sufficiently in Congress that they'll be able to work on these issues and not be writing legislation that would be great for 1998 or 2001?
Certainly, as we continue to adopt new technologies and the companies or the private sector innovate into a new generation of technology, the laws have to be written in a way that's flexible enough to evolve with the technology. So I think to answer your question more specifically, there is an improving knowledge of the current internet, but I think that we collectively don't have a good understanding of how the mobility and all of these new mobile technologies are going to change the way we work and play and live online in the next 5 to 10 years.
There's an approach that I've talked about with several chief information security officers across government in the context of people using that information who are authorized to use that information, where they're talking about securing the data rather than trying to secure the devices. And I wonder if policy-wise that might not be a direction you think that we would wind up going in with rather than trying to secure the hardware parts of the networks, where we're trying to secure the things that potentially people will want to get at.
I think that securing the data is definitely an important step, but it's at some point the data may not always be encrypted at rest and encrypted in transmission, because at some point you're going to be generating and working with the data. And so it'll still be important to try to secure the device and the infrastructure that it rides on.
You write something interesting in your testimony. You mentioned it to the members of the committee. It'll be important to gain industry's perspective and understand the second and third order effects of the proposals that Congress is considering. That's where I want to go when we come back from the break, if we can. My guest is Melissa Hathaway, president of Hathaway Global Strategies and the former cyber advisor to Presidents Bush and Obama. We'll continue our conversation in just a bit on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Pete Williams. A wildfire in the mountains of New Mexico is now about 2 miles from the government's main nuclear weapons lab in Los Alamos, but officials say radioactive materials are safe. In Nebraska, floodwaters surround one nuclear power plant and edge toward another. NBC's Mike Taibbi says a government nuclear power official is watching the plants at Fort Calhoun and Cooper.
He said that the operators of these two plants, this one and the Cooper Station downriver, 80 miles, so far are doing a good job. They're on top of everything. The situation is stable and under control. All the safety systems, as of now, in place and working.
Two U.S. senators are proposing to raise the age of eligibility for Medicare to 67 from 65. Republican Tom Coburn says the plan deserves bipartisan support.
We need to shake the political shackles and start doing what's best for the country, not what's best for any party.
He's joined by Joe Lieberman, the Connecticut Independent. More at MSNBC.com. Pete Williams, NBC News Radio.
How do we celebrate summer? Saving money with e-values.
Member Nicole Recker on the Sam's Club e-value saving celebration. June 29th through July 4th, save on top of already low Sam's Club prices, like $50 off a Samsung 40-inch LED TV,
$2 off artisan fresh chicken sausage, $1 off seedless watermelon,
and more. Not a member? Join June 29th through July 4th. Get the money-saving benefit plus members enjoy all year. E-values at Sam's Club. Savings made simple. Supplies are limited and may not be available in all clubs. One item per membership, no rain checks.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is texting getting way out of hand? You know, I can't... Oh, please. Oh, that is funny. Where was I? Oh, yes, about texting. Pardon me. LOL, you are my BFF. So, like I was saying...
Switch to Geico now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability is a series featuring a panel of renowned government and technology industry experts, sponsored by Cisco. During this fifth panel in the series, focused on smart buildings and cloud services, panelist Gerald T. Charles Jr., Director, Office of Strategy, Planning and Operation, Public Sector, commented,
"Our smart buildings are now really reflecting the change in our workplace or our workspaces, and so we've really been looking at that at Cisco as we provide a variety of solutions, not just in talking, I mean, not just in exchanging the information, you know, with IT, but how is that information exchanged? Where are people? How mobile are they? How do we really help them collaborate? How do they use video as we bring in all the human senses as we make our decisions?"
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, work.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Deborah Vess is the Associate Chief Information Officer at the Treasury Department and leads the HR Connect Program Office. She's also a Causey Award winner.
On the system that we created, which is Entry on Duty, it's about the onboarding process. And this product is really what we call one-to-many. So it's very exciting from a technology perspective to define a product that can actually be leveraged across many different agency and bureaus' needs because they all do something a little different.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Melissa Hathaway is my guest in the executive suite today. Every Tuesday at 3, we talk to people who have led or are leading at the very highest levels of the federal government, on the most difficult and complex issues about which decisions are made. Melissa Hathaway, of course, a former cyber advisor to President Bush and President Obama, and now the president of Hathaway Global Strategies. And Melissa, you were before the House Homeland Security Subcommittee last week dealing with cybersecurity, and you wrote something that I thought was particularly interesting. As Congress considers these proposals, you're talking about the various pieces of legislation or proposed legislation, things you'd like to see incorporated into legislation. As Congress considers these proposals, it'll be important to gain industry's perspective and understand the second and third order effects of the proposals. Now, what I read between the lines there is, watch out for unintended consequences. Is that a fair reading on my part, do you think?
Yes, I think so. I think first, it's important to get a perspective from industry on what is the next generation technology, and then as we consider regulation, is that just going to impose a new cost on industry and force all of industry to a standard of care, but it might actually be a lower standard of care than some of them may have adopted if the government were to choose a different path. I think second, as payment card industry for our credit cards, they adopted a standard that was a regulation, and it was based on compliance. And so Heartland Payments, when they had their breach, they were compliant, but they weren't necessarily secure. So as we move toward regulation, how do you both achieve the compliance with the regulation as well as a higher standard of security or layer of security, which is really the intent of the legislation? And I think third, there hasn't really been a conversation about other market levers that could be used, like tax credits or, an innovation or an R&D agenda, and there are carrots, so there are sticks, and I think that we should everybody should be discussing both and the merits of both.
I think anybody who looks at it fairly and objectively would say there is a conversation between the administration and industry. Are you seeing that conversation between Congress and industry, or is there still some work to do there?
Well, I think that the committee hearing that I participated in last week was a good indication that Congress is working with or trying to gain an industry perspective. When it comes to legislation, I think that we need to have a broader dialogue. Both the administration needs and should provide more transparency into what it's thinking, and then Congress needs to have the public debate.
We got to take another quick break. When we come back, you talked about a number of different agencies involved in all of this, and I'd like to talk to you about how they all fit together and work together. We'll do that when we come back with Melissa Hathaway on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment.
Vacation time is just around the corner. Ready to go? Since 1967, Ackerman Security has been keeping families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, you can trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. Ackerman offers the latest technology like cell phone control, wireless monitoring, and remote video to your web-enabled phone, iPad, or laptop. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Schneider Electric has a proven 100-year-long record of supporting federal agencies to help you meet your responsibilities to mandates, missions, and taxpayers by combining the expertise of brands you know and trust, like Square D, APC, and Pelco, to make your energy safe, reliable, efficient, productive, and green. When it comes to power, process and machine, IT room, building, and security management, Schneider Electric's your energy expert and green partner for a sustainable and prosperous future. Visit Schneider-Electric.us.
Living with cancer. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, cancer is scary, but advances in detection and treatment over the past 30 years have made it less scary for some of the most common cancers. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Researchers track data on cancer. The CDC's Erica White says people thought that a cancer diagnosis was a death sentence, but it's not necessarily true.
Persons living with a history of cancer are now described as cancer survivors rather than cancer victims, with almost 60% of people living 5 years after they were diagnosed.
Screening tests can help to spot cancers early, when they can be best treated. White's study, in collaboration with the National Cancer Institute, was in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
What is DOD doing to break down information stovepipes across the military? How has net centricity changed over time? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Dave Wenigren, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at the U.S. Department of Defense on the Business of Government Hour. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour. Dave Wenigren, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
ACT IAC is looking for a few good members. Do you have what it takes? Are you a techie or a govie? Do you want to make a positive impact? Can you bring fresh ideas to the table? Join ACT IAC today and help solve government's toughest IT challenges while advancing your career and making great new friends and contacts. To become a member, visit actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Or call 703-208-4800. ACT IAC wants you.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. My guest for the hour has been Melissa Hathaway, a former cyber advisor to Presidents Bush and Obama, and now the president of Hathaway Global Strategies. We have talked, Melissa, throughout this hour, and you wrote about and spoke about in your testimony to members of Congress last week, the House Homeland Security Subcommittee that deals with cybersecurity. Any number of federal agencies, some of the most important ones that deal with cyber are NIST. They're, of course, located in the Commerce Department, the FBI located in the Justice Department, DHS, its own entity, the intelligence community, its own entity. There are little pieces of cyber jurisdiction all over the place. What are your thoughts about the communication that's going on and whether that's even the right model anymore?
I think that if you take a look at the different missions that all of the departments and agencies have, they all have an important part of cybersecurity, and it's really an all of government play to use the authorities along with dependence or recognition on the private sector is going to be the ones to deliver, you know, the secure products and services and or restore infrastructure when it goes down. You know, Department of Homeland Security has the responsibility for protecting the homeland and the critical infrastructures, or at least outlining what's necessary for that. The Department of Defense, broadly for our national defense and national security, which is the Title 10 jurisdiction, and the stand-up of Cyber Command is a step in that direction. FBI and the Department of Justice leverage Title 18, which is the protection, is the law enforcement mission, and allows them to investigate crimes that are conducted on that infrastructure. Title 32 allows you to call up the National Guard, and if there's a state of an emergency. Title 44 is where every department and agency has to keep its networks up and running to keep that IT running. And then Title 50 for the intelligence community is to inform everybody when there is a pending threat and how to think about it. So I think of it as a all of government play, and it's really up to the White House and the cybersecurity coordinator to be the quarterback and to keep everybody in the game and playing and working with each other.
Is that cybersecurity coordinator, you think, going to wind up at DHS at some point in time?
I don't think so, because when you embed it at one department or agency, they don't have the authority to give commands, if you will, or direction to another department or agency. Mm-hmm. Each department and agency is independent, which is why the job at the White House is so important.
Where that person resides or where that person works from has been the subject of a lot of discussion. It was something that was discussed out and among the community even when you were in that chair. And so it's interesting for me to hear your perspective on that, because it seems so many of the other functions of government, at least when it comes to cybersecurity for the government itself, are headed to DHS. I think it would be reasonable for somebody to make an argument that that's where that person should be based.
I think it would, when you're only talking about the civilian part of the infrastructure and or interface with the private sector, some could argue that that is and should be the role of DHS. But I don't believe anybody would be talking about giving them the threat, basically the intelligence mission, the broader law enforcement mission, the Department of Defense's mission. And so unless if you create a new department or agency, which I think would be very difficult to pull all the different piece parts out of all of the different departments and agencies into one, that it needs to be an all of government play.
Melissa, it is always terrific to have you on the program. I appreciate your insight and your wisdom into all of these issues. It's terrific to talk to you again, as always.
Thank you, Francis.
Thanks for being on. Melissa Hathaway is the president of Hathaway Global Strategies and former cybersecurity advisor to President Bush and President Obama. We have her testimony to the subcommittee of the House Homeland Security Committee posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll put a link up so that you can watch the video of the hearing anytime you want to see it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming in hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose, a thumbs up for DOD in Afghanistan from the next U.S. military leader there. You'll hear from General John Allen next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.